It is time now for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning. And on a Friday morning, of course, it's live. We rebroadcast it on the weekend and next week. So let's bring in David and say hello. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be with you from the media capital of the world, New York City, where the Media Week comes every week. And as you say, it gets rebroadcast through the rest of the week.
Well, it's never a dull moment in our world.
it's another week of turbulent activity in the media world, of course.
Now,
yes, indeed.
Take
your pick.
We have to start off again with the Trump, the dumpster fire called our president, Donald Trump. That's my own opinion as a joke, folks, so don't get too upset. I've made fun of Democrats as well. But this is nothing funny. It appears, after being prodded on a telephone call, that Donald Trump decided to just, without contacting the generals, without contacting Homeland Security, to pull the remaining troops out of Syria. And wouldn't you know, the day after our troops pull out, Turkey starts an all-out offensive after Donald Trump said, you know, he didn't think that they would do that. It's just another story in the never-ending story about how you can't be a CEO and run the country like a CEO. You just can't. You can't do it.
Well, yes, it's no surprise that, of course, the Turks would roll over the border immediately after that phone call. That would appear to be what the phone call was all about. When our president talks to autocrats these days, and President Erdogan of Turkey certainly counts as an autocrat, then he goes a little weak at the knees, it seems, in admiration. And according to at least one official involved in that phone call, and of course now we know lots of officials concerned with the president's phone calls are getting concerned about many of those calls and what goes on within them, and is not generally put around in terms of what information is in them. Many of the president's phone calls now have a kind of extra security clamp on them because officials are so concerned about what he may say or may agree, indeed, with the other party or the other official party on the line. All the listeners, all the workers, as it were, the contributors to the call, in the sense that they have briefed the president for all that means, and of course they make and keep a record of the call as it's going, and then analyze it for further action. In this case, there was one of the officials listening who told Newsweek magazine, anyway, that it was very simply a matter of the president, the United States president, getting rolled, because Erdogan has been wanting to roll tanks and the like into northern Syria for a long time now, and basically the point of his phone call was to get a green light from the president to do it, and then that's exactly what he got. And then, of course, when our president saw what was happening, there was this rapid effort at a backtrack threatening Turkey now with some economic obliteration. I mean, it's so interesting to see the hyperbolic language that is employed out of the White House these days. But these are hyperbolic times, I guess. You know, while at the same time we get the impeachment crisis getting more and more fraught, and the president's friends and associates, his lawyer, his personal lawyer, or the man who plays his personal lawyer on television, Rudy Giuliani, has two associates now who are arrested. The now instantly infamous pair of former Soviet country residents who are now best described, I think, as Miami businessmen. Lev and Igor. Again, I shouldn't treat this as funny, but it has its ludicrous and almost caricature nature that we just can't get away from. Lev and Igor are now arrested with one-way tickets out of the country at Dulles Airport, and only hours before that flight, they were having drinks with, or at least one of them was having drinks with Giuliani in the bar of one of the Trump hotels. And, I mean, it makes you weep if it doesn't make you laugh.
And in one of the Strangers in Fiction but True, you can't make this stuff up. They both had tickets to go to Vienna when they were caught in the airport, and guess who also had tickets to go to Vienna?
That's a detail that has gone by me.
Rudy Giuliani had airplane tickets. Now, he wasn't with them at the airport, but he had tickets to go to Vienna. These two were sitting in the airport with their tickets ready to leave Dulles when they were taken in. And here's where the president really, I don't know these people. I have my picture taken with lots of people. And then, of course, three or four pictures of him with the thumbs up with these guys surfaced. Not only that, the pictures of Giuliani. There's a video of Giuliani over with these guys. And also Donald Trump's son, there's multiple pictures of him with these guys. But, of course, I don't know these guys. I have my picture taken with everybody. This is where the president really falls down. You know, as my grandmother used to say, keep digging that hole. You're getting deeper and deeper, and you're not going to be able to climb out of it. He's on the fly trying to write off something that immediately blows up in his face. But the more sad part of all of this, the saddest part of all this is that our allies now just cannot trust what the United States says. Now, I'm not saying the United States has always done the right thing, okay? I'm not saying that at all. God, no, we haven't. We've made our foreign policy mistakes. But when we say something to allies, whether it's been a good idea, in my opinion, or not, we've always followed up with it. We've been consistent. Now, countries that don't like us even more. Countries that were on the fence about trusting us don't trust us anymore. And now our allies, our major allies, have to look at us and say, gosh, you can talk to diplomats and you can talk to the State Department, you can set things up, but you have a president that at a whim will change it instantly. And that's a really sad and bad thing for this country.
Sure, and the people who are suffering the most, or likely to, well, already indeed suffering it, because the fighting's already broken out, and the people in the crosshairs are the Kurds, the Syrian Kurds, who acted as allies, very effective allies. It's perfectly arguable. In fact, many people do argue, I would say that the evidence is very clear that if it wasn't for the Kurds, we wouldn't have had the victory that's been scored against ISIS. And indeed, those Kurds are holding prisoner an awful lot of ISIS fighters, and also in not very good conditions, many of their families too. A big social and as well as political problem in that area. But they have much cause to complain about the whimsical nature of this president's rule. But on the other hand, you know, that's not all that new. As you say, America's track record is not perfect in terms of its treatment of its own allies. The Kurds were encouraged to rise up against Saddam Hussein in Iraq, because they are a stateless people, of course. They are spread across that part of the greater Middle East, Turkey, Syria, and Iraq. And the first president, Bush, encouraged them to rise up against Saddam Hussein and then never followed through, resulting in the massacre of many of them then. And, you know, it's in a way, it's it, it's no great surprise to the Kurds that they should be let down by their big ally, the United States. But it is a surprise the way it was done. As you say, on a whim, it looks like. And in fact, what it seems to be like is Turkish insistence winning the day against a president who claims to be one of the big boys in the strongman brigade, but when he comes up against one of the world's strongmen, he doesn't seem all that strong.
What also is interesting is what Erdogan was going. What he said once this happened in Europe, the EU started complaining. He basically told them to be quiet, otherwise he's going to send 3.5 million refugees their way. And this is the domino effect. And this is why state departments and countries try to work together so you don't have a domino effect like this where one domino falls and all of a sudden they all fall and you have no control.
The problem about expecting consistency out of the United States and then getting annoyed when you don't get anything like consistency is rippling in perhaps unexpected directions. It's worth looking at the media of another neighborhood country in the Middle East and its response to what's going on here in northern Syria with the Turkish invasion. And, of course, concomitant with that, the letting down of allies. Who's America's biggest ally in the Middle East? Of course, it's Israel. And, of course, in the last two or three years, it has looked like that the alliance between the leadership, at least, of these two nations, the United States and Israel, has been very firmly bolstered. Prime Minister Netanyahu has gotten very close with Trump. It's a closeness that he advertises enormously within Israel. He's managed in a wafer-thin way, but he's managed to win elections twice now on the basis of his buddy-buddy relationship with Trump. But now, to look at the Israeli media on all sides, it's not a partisan matter. Israelis are now very concerned about how much they can rely on Trump. Now, it's taken a little while for that concern to get raised, but they certainly are anxious about this peculiar turn of events, which in effect not only damages the Kurds, but will in all likelihood advantage Iran as well as President Assad in Syria. And they had every reason to believe, or at least some substantial or at least some apparent reason to believe, that Netanyahu and Trump were forging some kind of real cooperation. It doesn't look that way today.
I think Boris Johnson has to be happy because he's taken off the world headlines with all this. We don't talk about Brexit anymore.
I'm not sure he's concerned about what we're talking about very much, but he still has his own problems.
Right. So,
and indeed, he had a meeting with the Irish Prime Minister in an interesting location. It's a part of the world that doesn't feature in international news much, but is a little part of northwest England called the Wirral. It's a stubby little peninsula that sort of forms a symbolic role here, I guess. It sticks out into the Irish Sea. It's a kind of little bit of England that's looking towards Ireland. And in this little rural part of this peninsula, in a very lovely old manor house called Thornton Manor, Boris meets with Leo Varadkar, the very modern and Indian-heritaged Irish Prime Minister. They're now talking and making noises that suggest, hey, it's not too late. The Halloween deadline for Brexit is rapidly approaching, but we may have, a basis on which we can come to a new agreement. Well, if you believe that, you're very, very trusting. We'll have to see how that goes.
Well, that would make you, but optimism on any level is very, very, very alarming because, it doesn't sell. No, but that's the entire point. And that I was listening, of course, to the two of you talking about the goings on, the current goings on, and it's always through the exact same filter. And nothing wrong with that. That's just what it is. But it seems so unfortunate that media, if you will, is just, can't we get a different lens? I remember watching it was one of those horrible, sorry guys, Sunday morning, political shows. It must have been, I think it was, must have been on CBS. I think it was Face the Nation. It was some time ago. It was in the midst of high Russian drama, high. And they had, and I wish I could remember her name, a really high up, former Democratic senator, but really legit, elder stateswoman-esque, you know, just, and she was part of this, again, a legitimate panel, not as panel has come to, not a death panel, not as a panel has come to be described. And they said to her, you know, basically, you know, how does it feel to have this basically Russian spy in the White House? And she looked at whoever it was and essentially said, well, I mean, this is all well and good, but then what about the people who know that he's a spy and haven't removed him? It was like the essence was, guys, keep your politics and everything. Don't make the common sense wires touch, because you're going to have a problem. Because it's it. And that was her message, and they elided over it as quickly as possible, and off we went back to the drama and the outrage and the scare. But it does seem as though, and, it's never good to be optimistic. But after the very quiet, you know, it's like, okay, now we're proroguing. It's such a weird word. Now we're proroguing Parliament until Monday. And it's like, okay, that's fine. And after that, and then, you know, if you, depending on what you read, people have been running around talking and chatting, and you know, the choreography is so.
Oh, you're talking about the European.
I've moved now back to because my comment is essentially on the choreography. If people can't see the choreography at this point, I just wash my hands, and I am staggered that our free press basically just writes the same thing again and again and again and again.
Well, the filter doesn't change very much. That's true. I'm not sure what the former senator woman would be meaning by.
She meant that Nancy, really and truly, from a political standpoint, if this were, you know, if this were the case, then a lot of people, including the majority, including Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and all of these people who are there and in the midst of it, you know, if they really believed that this was the situation, then they would and should have taken steps. It was in answer to a question that I cannot remember how it was phrased. So this is just going back. But the fact was, she was just, I think they said, do you believe that this is whatever, X situation? And she said, well, no. And it wasn't.
And as so often on the morning shows on Sunday, I imagine from what you're describing, is that there was in some kind of particularly hyperbolic mood, was it? Some fantastical notion that, for instance, I mean, in the loose language you were referring to, that we have a Russian spy in the White House.
Well,
a Russian agent, at least.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, the performance of this administration from the very top has been so erratic that almost any ridiculous fantasy can be made to have some credibility in the telling of it, and that's the very strange norm upsetting world we live in.
Right, people, it was Jane Harmon.
People are encouraged now to have the wildest fantasies and permission to believe them and indulge in them too. On the other hand, there's a lot of evidence to support the wildest of conspiracy theories. It may be just an accident, you know, contributing to it may be just an accident of Trump being photographed with the wrong people. But
oh no,
but
you
so, it just doesn't look good.
No, there's no question.
At the moment,
there's no question that it doesn't look good, and it hasn't looked good from the very beginning. And what I'm talking about is the filter. You would do a better job. One would do a better job if everything doesn't look good. So, you know, just widen the lens a little bit, and then the stuff that doesn't look good really has a context for not looking good.
Yeah, and you see that it's, although we can huff and puff about it, a lot of it is not so different from, or much of it anyway, is not so different from what goes on anyway. It's a lot cruder these days. It's a lot more hyperventilated, but it's if you take a long view, it's not so different from some terrible times that we've gone through in the past. I mean, and it's useful to, you know, broaden that view, widen the lens. And for instance, I don't think I mean, people get impatient with me sometimes when I bring up Watergate so much in the current context. People saying it's so different. Well, it may be, but on the other hand, it suggests that we've been down roads similar to the current one before, and there have been ways and means of getting out of a what was at the time was called the great national nightmare. And of course, it's also important to look at how our current situation is not the same as Watergate, but at least widen the lens and make the effort to draw comparisons where they're appropriate and make distinctions when they're appropriate too.
And that's what my question is: why is that so impossible? And I will go on to say that it is Jane Harmon, who
Jane
and
Harmon,
she
course.
Is the
very long and a substantial experience in the intelligence field, of course.
Right.
A really valuable commentator for the moment, I would say.
It was just striking at that moment that she was yes, and there's probably more that we're not talking about. So let's, you know, she handled it as adroitly as one could. But I couldn't help but think that had I not been watching that, I would have had a completely and the chances of me watching it were, you know, it was totally random. But I would have had a completely different, experience with the information as it was being presented at that time. That's all. Which brings me again.
People who keep their heads when all around are losing theirs. They're precious people, and we need to cherish them and listen to them. In amongst all the hysteria.
No, the fact is that it's the filter question. Is there any? Let's call it external agent. Is there anyone in this business anymore who is responsible for widening the filter, or is it down to the individual? Because, you know, this brings us to media literacy. People don't know how to do it. They just don't.
The herd mentality takes over very easily in our profession, I'm afraid. We find ourselves seeing that every week now. I mean, we it's as if we talk about it every week too. It's a combination of the vast competitiveness of our media now, and not that it's all, I mean, it's always been competitive, and that's one of the good things about it. But the race for the lowest common denominator that's consequent on that competitiveness, when you get as caught up in the frenzy of it all as we have done. is lamentable. And frankly, I don't think, you know, if you're looking for the adults in the room, there don't seem to be very many around at all.
What happens to them?
I can't name a single one anymore. That's holding up the proper cool values of our trade.
We talk about all these subjects, and here's how small the world is, David. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. The ambassador that was recalled from the Ukraine is
Marie Ivanovich.
Is from Kent,
Connecticut.
Yes, absolutely.
which is a stone's throw down Route 7 from us here
at this very moment.
And what's even more interesting is that another famous Kent resident, that of course heavily involved in the history, whether you love him or hate him, Dr. Henry Kissinger lives in Kent as well. So no matter how
our broadcasting area is very special, I would say.
Absolutely. It's our little.
But no matter how large the world is, and it really does come home when you have things like this.
What a coincidence, probably, that, they're both from the point that people forget, and this is where I'm really desperate for the grown-ups in the room, make the connections.
Yeah.
This isn't all happening in a vacuum. There are, and it's easy enough to write into an article. It's like, oh yeah, there were 20 other people, involved in this. Just start to know who talks to whom and why and where they came from, and you'll have a much better sense of what's going on. I'm not saying agree with it. Disagree. Be difficult. Marshall's saying, shut up.
We're out of time.
Well, that's the one thing that is always absolutely immutable. The clock ticks on.
And in that case, thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.
Of course, David joins us every Friday live.